The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. I am Steve Hook. It is good to be with you. And it's good that we are staring down the barrel of a weekend, because after this week, I don't know about you, but I can certainly use a break, maybe some pool time. We've got a whole lot going on today. I don't need to tell you that. If you live in the States, you know that for the first time in our nation's history, the sitting administration has publicly or federally indicted the leading candidate of the opposition party for nothing, for fear, I suspect. This has nothing to do with carrying the water for former President Trump, but it does have everything to do with exposing the rank corruption and, frankly, the metastasized corruption throughout the body politic in this nation now. We are staring down the barrel of straight-up tyranny and authoritarianism. And folks, if you ever wondered what quote-unquote fundamental change looks like, you're seeing it right now. You're seeing it right now. The very day that the House Oversight Committee is presented with an FBI Form 1023 that proves conclusively that the Biden family was involved in pay-to-play schemes, including 20 separate shell companies, LLCs, limited liability corporations. Now, if you small business owners, you know what an LLC is. You probably have one. Can anybody out there name one business that Joe Biden is in? One business outside of government? I'll bet you can't. Does he do silkscreen t-shirts on the beach during spring break? No. Does he run a pest control company? No. Does he have a small cleaning service? No. Does he have a dry cleaners? No. Butcher shop? No. Cobbler? No. Tinker? Tailor? No. He had shell companies set up all over the place. And on the very day that the entire committee gets to see these papers. Now, you'll recall a couple of days ago, Christopher Wray thought he was going to be cute. And he came in to this Capitol with the Form 1023 that they never denied having. This form details in stunning detail just how corrupt Joe Biden is and his entire family. And frankly, the agencies within the government. So Ray decides he's going to be cute with it. And he comes in and he allows Jamie Raskin, son of an avowed Marxist, he himself a Marxist, though he's not nearly as open as his old man was about it. But they let Jamie Raskin, who is the minority leader in the House Oversight Committee, and then they let James Comer, the sitting chair of the House Oversight Committee, see this form. So it was turned into a he said scenario. And how do you think the media is going to play that? The media is going to say, well, Jamie Raskin said there's nothing there. So guess what? There's nothing there. Well, this didn't sit well with the Speaker of the House. And Kevin McCarthy called up Christopher Wray and said, if you do not present that form to the entire Oversight Committee, you will be held in criminal contempt of Congress. Criminal. That's important. And by the way, your funding, your billions of dollars that you want for the new FBI headquarters, you're not getting one red cent of that. And boy, just like that, Christopher Wray, knowing that he was painted into a corner, knowing that he had nowhere to go, relented. And he showed up yesterday and he allowed the entire Oversight Committee to see Form 1023, which is an unclassified document, which proved unequivocally that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were each paid $5 million by the former very corrupt executives at Burisma in Ukraine. And now, all of a sudden, the very day that happens, President Trump gets indicted. We were talking about the shiny ball before. This is it. You're seeing it again. And today I've got a wonderful guest on. Haven't had him on in a little while. And I look forward to chatting with Jonathan Emord. Jonathan Emord is one of the foremost constitutional attorneys in the United States. He also happens to be a candidate for U.S. Senate from the Commonwealth of Virginia. He's running against, well, he's running in a primary right now, but he's outdistancing all of his primary opponents, lapping them as far as money goes. And he's in a very good space to get the Republican nomination for Senate. And then, of course, he'd be running against Tim Kaine, who has grown roots in D.C. and needs to be booted. I suspect that Jonathan Emord's campaign is going to be getting a lot of money in the coming days. And I suspect that a whole bunch of Republican campaigns across the fruited plain are going to see their coffers filling up. You know why? Because Americans are sick to death of what's going on right now. They're pissed off at the government. They're infuriated with the media that is knowingly in the tank for the Democrats, laughing about it. And they're pissed off at the media manipulation for the hatred of one man, Donald Trump. And if Trump's words ever sounded like they might ring a little bit true, boy, don't they now. When he said, they're coming after me, but they're really going after you, now we know. There is a reason that parents at school board meetings across the country were labeled domestic terrorists by this DOJ and Merrick Garland, the most corrupt attorney general in the history of this nation. There is a reason that Catholics are being targeted by this DOJ. Trump isn't Catholic, but they're going after Catholics. And this is what Trump meant. They are going after the American system. This is fundamental change. And unless you are just absolutely will, you know, I've said it before and it's worth saying again. Willful blindness is one thing, but willful stupidity, I just can't accept willful stupidity. You have to be absolutely hateful of your own country and frankly of 50% of your own countrymen and women to cheer this crap on. So we'll talk to Jonathan Emord. We'll get his take on it constitutionally and we'll see what he has to say about it. But my suspicion is this corrupt as hell administration has just crossed the Rubicon. This is the most historical, and not in a good way, indictment in U.S. jurisprudence history, as far as I'm concerned. It's staggering what they're doing to Trump. I remind you that Hillary Clinton had an illegal server in her basement that was no doubt compromised by, and even the detestable James Comey said that, yes, her server was compromised. Well, guess what? She had loads and loads of classified intel that she illegally had. She was not president. Biden had classified intel going all the way back to 34 years ago when he was in the Senate. Obama had classified emails. Clinton found classified emails in the sock drawer. Remember that? But they're going after Trump. Why? Because they're scared to death of Trump. If Trump wins, a lot of people are going to go to prison and they know it. And they're going to do anything they can to stop him. And I do mean anything they can to stop him. And it's a very scary time in this nation right now. I never thought I'd live to see the day, but here we are. So we'll talk to Jonathan Emord in just a bit. Hey, listen, at TNT Radio, we never, ever go home. That's right. We never go home because we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 a day, 24/7 every single day, and we're online globally. So no matter what, no matter where, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Stream the news wherever you are.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, let's bring Ruckus into the party here. It's time to bring in Adam Clark. This is kind of all part of the same puzzle. Things are not looking up for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. He has just lost his appeal against extradition to the United States on espionage charges against a high court judge who has rejected the move. And it could even get worse for Julian, because by the time everything is said and done, Assange's fate, alongside the fate of press freedom, may ultimately rest in the outrageously corrupt hands of the Joe Biden administration. Pardon me. Here with the story, joining me now, TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Ruckus, welcome to the show, brother. It's a scary day, man.
It's a dark Friday for sure. When you take the 30,000 foot view on this stuff, you're like, oh, wow, we're kind of screwed, aren't we? Unless we all band together and say no. But I think, unfortunately, we're past that part. So many people are asleep, Steve. It's a real shame. But yes, this is very sad news. Obviously, the listeners are probably very well aware of the plight of Julian Assange. So here's the most recent news as of yesterday, I believe, or just the other day. There was a 3-page decision handed down. Mr. Justice Swift rejected all 8 grounds for appeal of an extradition order signed in June last year by then Home Secretary Priti Patel, who would see the journalist sent to the United States, which would be bad for him, where he is wanted for publishing thousands of classified and sensitive documents, for being a journalist. And journalism is not a crime, just unfortunately that's what they want us to think. Lawyers for Assange, age 51 now, argued in their appeal of Patel's order that the prosecution was politically motivated and that it violated the US-UK extradition treaty barring extradition for political offenses, as reported by The Guardian. Under that treaty, extradition shall not be granted if the, quote, offense for which extradition is requested is a political offense, end quote. It's pretty obvious. It's pretty clear, night and day. Attorneys for the Australian native also argued that the extradition is an abusive process. Yeah. Swift's decision is not yet available, so it is unclear exactly why the 8 grounds of appeal were rejected. Like, do these people need a reason? Assange's wife, human rights lawyer Stella Assange, took to Twitter following the judge's decision to write, quote, on Tuesday next week, my husband Julian Assange will make a renewed application for appeal to the High Court. She said, quote, the matter will then proceed to a public hearing before 2 new judges at the High Court, and we remain optimistic that we will prevail and that Julian will not be extradited to the United States, where he faces charges that could result in him spending the rest of his life in a maximum security prison for what? Oh, that's right. As she says, quote, publishing true information that revealed war crimes committed by the U.S. government, end quote. So to say he's not going to get a fair shake once they ship him over here is an understatement. Assange is wanted in the United States on 18 criminal charges of breaking an espionage law and conspiring to hack government computers after WikiLeaks published a U.S. military video in 2010 showing a 2007 attack by Apache helicopters in Baghdad that killed multiple civilians, including 2 Reuters news staff. Pretty damning stuff. Additionally, of course, WikiLeaks has released thousands of secret classified files and diplomatic cables, which included critical appraisals of world leaders, including even Russian President Vladimir Putin. There are some important quotes I'd like to share here if I can find them. Seth Stern, director of advocacy for Freedom of the Press Foundation, called on Biden to stop the case against Assange. Good luck. And, quote, show the world he's serious about press freedom. Stern said in a statement, quote, the idea of Assange or anyone being treated in a U.S. court for obtaining and publishing confidential documents the same way investigative reporters do every day should be terrifying to all Americans, end quote. I would argue, Steve, it's even more alarming and terrifying knowing that this ultimately rests in, as you said, the extremely corrupt hands of Biden. What do you think?
I think that all of this is a piece of the same puzzle. I got to be full disclosure. When the whole Julian Assange case first started, I didn't really know a whole hell of a lot about it, but I was not on Assange's side at first. I said, this guy's leaking U.S. intel. This isn't right. But you see, a funny thing happened on the way to my cynicism. I started watching what was going on around the rest of the country. I started watching the politicization of intel agencies, our DOJ, various agencies around the government. And then I started, I kind of had an about face on this. And I think that Julian Assange is being set up like a bowling pin, just like Trump is. And I think that this evil cabal, and that's not an exaggeration, that is not hyperbole, this is an evil cabal that is fundamentally changing this nation. They will do anything to keep any truth that might dirty their own hands. They're going to do anything they can to stop it. And Julian Assange is an easier one to take down than Trump, because a whole bunch of people in this country kind of feel the way I used to initially think about Julian Assange. So he doesn't get the public sympathy that he should get. And he may well now get, because Trump has got millions and millions and millions of Americans behind him. And I suspect quite a few more after this stunt that this special prosecutor Jack Smith and Merrick Garland and all the corruptocrats inside the FBI and the other intel agencies are pulling. This is, like I said, Ruckus, it's all part of the same corrupt puzzle, and it's disgusting, and I'm scared to death as an American for it. But I do appreciate you staying on the story, and of course we'll follow. I suspect he will be extradited to the country, but you know, who knows? And then of course he'll disappear into a dark hole and we'll never see him again or hear from him, just the way they want it. Anyway, brother, I do appreciate that story, and keep us abreast of what's going on as the days and weeks go forward, my friend. And have a great weekend. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, Steve. We'll speak again on Monday. Take care.
You got it. You enjoy yours. All right, that's going to do it for Ruckus. You're listening to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. Stick around. Coming up, we've got one of the finest constitutional attorneys in the United States, Jonathan Emord, who just happens to be running for the Senate out of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I have no doubt that Jonathan has a lot to say about what we've witnessed the last 24 hours. And we'll hear what he has to say coming up next on the Steve Hook Show on TNT.
TNT Radio's State of the Nation.
Gee, there's a little more to this story. Gee, there's a little more to my uncle's story.
I listened to RFK Jr. today on Twitter Space, and I really feel like, you know, regardless of what you think about our current political system and about Twitter itself and Elon Musk, it was a bit of a historic conversation and event just to have someone with that kind of, you know, name, sorry to boil it down to a brand, but the Kennedys are kind of a political brand, saying the things that he was saying, you know, openly speaking, much like you and I do in our, you know, unscripted, open, long form conversations where, you know, our chat room and our callers can ask open questions. I don't know. I don't think we've ever really seen that from a presidential candidate. Sure, we have these, you know, these debates and these town hall meetings, highly curated. And this was, you know, free range, feral politics. So I thought it was pretty interesting.
State of the Nation on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. This is the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio, and I'm very happy to once again welcome Jonathan Emord to the program. Jonathan, as I mentioned, is a leading constitutional attorney here in the States, as well as candidate for U.S. Senate in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Jonathan, hello there, sir. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Steve.
Yeah, it's great to have you back again, sir. And I know the campaign is going well for you. I know you're doing great on the fundraising end of it. And hopefully, after the events of the last 24 hours, you're going to see a big uptick. Jonathan, I don't believe that I'm overstating it when I say this is probably the most treacherous time for domestic politics in this nation's history, certainly in modern history. Did you ever think you'd live to see the day that a sitting president's Department of Justice would indict a former president who just, oh, by the way, happens to be the leading candidate for the opposition party? Did you ever think you would see this?
No, I never thought that I would see a day when the entire Department of Justice leadership and the FBI would be weaponized against the opposition political party. That is the characteristic of a third world country that is in disarray, not the characteristic of a constitutional republic. But of course, we have strayed quite afar, quite a distance from the founding principles and the limitations on government that are prescribed by the Constitution. And this situation, which directly attacks the principle, fundamental principle of equal justice under law, is a real threat, not just to Donald Trump, not just to the ability to have elections in which we don't have surreptitious activities undertaken by political parties using the power of government, but it is directly also against the American people, because if they can weaponize government to go after political enemies at the top, they can also do that at the bottom. And of course, we're seeing that with the kind of censorship that the Twitter files reveals, that everyday citizens who are communicating conservative information are being censored. And this is part and parcel of the much bigger movement towards transforming the United States into a socialist dictatorship or a totalitarian regime. So this should be a matter that offends not just those of a certain political class, but should offend every American that our nation now is traversing the line between a third world country with no ability to have the rule of law and our constitutional republic. If you don't have the ability to have equal justice under law in a judicial system, you end up with really just arbitrary will of those in power, which was the very thing our founding fathers were dedicated against. That's the nation. Our nation was founded on that principle of equal justice under law.
Yeah. You mentioned the Twitter files, and of course, that's true. That's a huge tranche of malfeasance that was exposed by Elon Musk and Barry Weiss and Matt Taibbi and the rest. But also, of course, we remember the letter from Merrick Garland's DOJ, basically accusing parents of being domestic terrorists. We know that the DOJ has been going after pro-life groups, Catholic groups specifically. It's not just in who they've been going after, it's who they have been ignoring. They ignored the Summer of Love, the mostly peaceful riots that delivered almost $4 billion worth of damage from coast to coast. Minority-owned businesses burned to the ground, cops killed, all of that ignored by the media, by the DOJ, as they foisted the January 6th commission on us. If you would have told me 5 years ago, Jonathan, that this would be the state of the country, I would have said, you're out of your mind. Now, there's not a rant suitable enough to go against what's happening right now. Do you think, it looks to me that Jack Smith is utterly and completely as corrupt as the people that hired him, Merrick Garland, the Biden administration et al. I know you don't believe that Trump can get a fair trial, but do you believe that the wherewithal of not just Trump, but the House Oversight Committee, the House Judicial Committee, all these committees that the Republicans are very much in control of, is that going to be enough to start to turn back this tide of utter tyranny that we're watching?
Well, I think it's a combination of jurists who will, at least I hope, on appeal, exercise sound judgment. I would hope that the trial judge would do the same. This is a situation where the Congress can actually make a big difference, and here's how. I believe this is a case of selective prosecution. I believe that there is probably evidence to indicate both as to the treatment of Joe Biden and, you know, by contrast that with Donald Trump, that they have chosen to pursue the matter against Donald Trump with the intention of destroying his likelihood of election. And they have chosen to ignore all of the overt information, 1,850 boxes of information, including classified information by a vice president, no less, who is not protected by Article 2 in the role of commander-in-chief. He's not the commander-in-chief. So his misappropriation of those documents, Biden's, is really a problem, because you have someone who could not declassify them, who was not the president of the United States. In the case of Trump, you've got really nothing more than every president of the United States in the modern era has done, taking information from the White House with the full knowledge of the National Archives, by the way. They had full knowledge of this and cooperating with them, but then they do this gotcha thing where they come in, they're run by Democrats at the National Archives, and they cooperate with the Justice Department, with the Biden administration, to do a gotcha on Donald Trump uniquely. Even though Barack Obama had the classified information, we know Biden had the classified information. We know that Hillary Clinton transferred over 100 classified documents, some highly classified human intelligence documents, to her insecure home server. And yet, what did Comey say with regard to that? That no reasonable prosecutor would pursue it. That's rubbish. She commit serious crimes there. She should have been behind bars. But when it comes to Donald Trump, this is an unprecedented move against a former president. A former president whose own aides, including Kash Patel, have said that he declassified the information that he took with him. And in point of fact, we have that information being held in cooperation with the federal government. Yeah. And to suggest otherwise is absurd. This is not a situation comparable to what Hillary Clinton did. This is not a situation comparable to what Joe Biden did. This was done by the former commander-in-chief, who, as commander-in-chief, says he declassified this information. So look at the case they put together. I mean, we don't have the indictment documents, so we don't know the specifics, but we do know what has been said, that there's a conspiracy count, that there's an obstruction count, and that there is also a count related to the Espionage Act. We can kind of put things together and see where they're going here. It is not an application for which there is precedent. They could have brought the same charges against Barack Obama. They could have brought the same charges against numerous prior presidents who have taken information. But the information was in the White House, in the president's possession, and they were cooperating with the National Archives. So yeah,
you won't get the media to admit that. The media won't say that. And not only that, Jonathan, but President Trump, this is the thing that really kind of just lights me up. The very day that Christopher Wray reluctantly was forced to hand over that 1023 form, which proved apparently by if you listen to MTG, I know people hate Marjorie Taylor Greene, but she may be a little bit wacky, but she's not dumb. And James Comer is not wacky or dumb. These people have come out and said, look, this proves without question that the Biden family, Hunter and Joe specifically, each received $5 million from the corrupt former heads of Burisma in Ukraine, which of course kind of circles back to the whole Ukrainian-Russian war thing. So the whole thing reeks to high heaven. But the very day that is shown to the entirety of the Oversight Committee, wham, time to indict Trump. It is the shiny ball. Look over here. Hey, media, don't talk about that. Here's what you want to talk about.
Exactly. We've seen this play before, Mrs. Lincoln. And when we saw what they did, this is the same thing Hillary Clinton and the Clinton-Cain campaign did in order to protect her from the scandal associated with her violation of the Espionage Act. You have, in this situation, Joe Biden engaged in this massive influence peddling program, which we have a lot of information, certainly enough to appoint a special counsel to investigate him. None of that happens with the Justice Department. And then we have this situation, just exactly what you're saying. They, on the very day, I mean, if you had any doubt about the political nature of this, on the very day that they get the information to the House Oversight Committee that there's direct evidence from a highly credible source that he was engaged in this corrupt act bribery activity for Joe Biden as vice president. And that is a damning piece of information. They create this bright, shiny object, and it's in the form of the action against Trump, to try to say, at a minimum, apparently, look over here. But what they're also saying long term is, okay, so Joe Biden is totally corrupt. Well, they're totally corrupt too. The difference here is that Donald Trump would never sell out his country for his own personal financial benefit. And in this instance, all he has done is what every president prior to him has done. So they're making up a narrative to try to destroy him. This is nothing new. We saw that with the Russia hoax. This is what they do with Donald Trump. And the reason is they're scared to death of him.
Yeah, they're scared to death of him. And ladies and gentlemen, it's worth pointing out that so far we know of 7 counts in this indictment. As you mentioned, Jonathan, we have not been able to read the indictment, but we do know the Espionage Act and all this other stuff. Sounds like a lot of process crime for sure. But if he were convicted of these 7 counts, he could be sentenced to over 100 years in prison. If that doesn't tell you how frightened they are of Donald Trump and the change agent that he represents, I don't know what will. I mean, this is so blatantly corrupt that I don't know how anybody could look themselves in the mirror and not see it. I just don't get it.
Well, I think that this thing, at least on appeal, and ultimately if on appeal to the Supreme Court, this isn't going to stand. And the reason for that is that this is definitely a concocted political prosecution, and it is unprecedented. It's much like what they did in New York against Trump, that Bragg did against Trump in New York. They're hobbling together information, and they're pursuing with vigor a prosecution that they do not bring against anyone else given the same information or worse. And so it's an example of selective prosecution. And as I say, Congress, really, the House and the Oversight Committee in particular, James Comer, really ought to investigate and compel the Justice Department to turn over information related to the extent to which they evaluated this and made a determination on the one hand not to proceed with a rapid prosecution of the Biden Inc. corrupt family, but instead chose to rapidly pursue Donald Trump. And this information, I think, will reveal, if it is obtained, ultimately it'll come out, that this was clearly a political selective prosecution. You need only show that intent, that they were aware of other acts that were of comparable question on the law, chose not to pursue them because of the political ramifications, and chose instead to go after this political opponent. And I think it's rather clear. I mean, Merrick Garland has lost any degree, to the extent that he had any, of validity for his actions as a Attorney General of the United States. And it's high time that the focus shifted. And were I with Donald Trump, I would be aiming at shifting the focus back to the accuser, because in this instance, the accusations are thin, but in addition, there's really got to be a basis for selective prosecution. And that would be a rather considerable defense here if the Congress does its job of oversight and starts to dig into this. They've got a lot of work to do. I mean, they really need to expose what's going on there. Yeah. And it hasn't been done yet. It has not been done. We know on the surface of it that this is plainly political, but we need the actual correspondence. We need the underlings to be deposed. We need the whole thing to come out. And so the focus should be put squarely on Merrick Garland and the lieutenants involved here and Jack Smith's operation to see the extent to which selective prosecution is here.
Well, the attorney in Miami that is going to be taking up this case for Jack Smith, I forget her name off the top of my head, but apparently she's as corrupt as the day is long, is a rank partisan. And what you said, I think, is kind of the nub of it all here, and that is they are scared to death of not just Trump for Trump's sake, they're scared to death of what he knows where the bodies are buried, apparently. I think the two biggest mistakes that Donald Trump ever made as president was appointing Christopher Wray and not firing him. And same goes for Anthony Fauci. But all that said, water under the bridge. Now we know. Do you think that the Rubicon here has been crossed? Will this light a fire under these? Because it looks like Comer is serious about this. And I would say the same of the judicial with Jordan. Do you think that the Rubicon has been crossed here? I mean, as far as the American people?
I think this is very clearly part and parcel of this more profound effort on the part of Democrats to ensure that there is Democratic control of the government for life, forever. And using all these nefarious means to eliminate the Trump people is part and parcel of a bigger movement, which is to say they want to control the process so much. I mean, it's part really includes the open border policy, again, their attempt to create a class of people that will keep them perpetually in power. They are ruling like authoritarians. They don't follow the Constitution. They rule by executive order. They don't go to Congress to seek the passage of legislation. All of this is really of one kind, which is to say, you've got an old man there who wants to cling to power in perpetuity, wants to be in that position, and he wants his political class that is with him to stay in power, and they want to defeat the power of the electorate. They tried a coup d'etat. They tried to overthrow Trump with a coup. I mean, this is a third tactic, and they almost got away with it. If it weren't for the very aggressive efforts of people like Tucker Carlson, you, others who have been fighting it from the start, they would have gotten away with a lot more. And had they done so, they might have been able to have Adam Schiff's false narrative hidden in the skiff as to what the truth was prevail. I mean, they were running with it. They thought they could get away with it. They thought, hey, look, if we say we have evidence, even if we don't, that's good enough. We'll be able to do it. And we'll be able to.
And they could get away with. And they can get away. We're speaking to Jonathan Emord, by the way, constitutional attorney, as well as a candidate for U.S. Senate in Virginia, U.S. Senate in Virginia. They also have a insanely corrupt to the core media behind them. They have academia. They have Hollywood. They have all of these. The levers of the social zeitgeist are all, it's a one-way street, and they're all left. And they have manipulated a hatred against Donald Trump and everything he represents. And I think Trump said it best when he said, they're coming after me, but they're really going after you. This kind of underscores that point. And I want to not be fearful for what's going to happen coming down the pike, but I can't help myself. I'm very scared of what's happening right now. And I'm wondering if you could kind of walk us off the ledge here a little bit, Jonathan. Is there anything that you see beyond what the oversight and the judicial committee can do? Is there anything else that we can, I guess, just rally the troops? I would wager that your campaign's probably getting some funding because of this crap.
And we're also gaining traction. I mean, people were rather surprised in the general community in Virginia when I won the straw poll for the Virginia Senate last week. I mean, they had the straw poll for the Virginia U.S. Senate race, and I won by a massive margin, over 61% of the vote.
Now, is that the primary or the general?
This is a straw poll in the primary. And I'm the clear front runner in the race. And but the overwhelming margin of victory in that straw poll signaled that even in Loudoun County, the most populous county in Virginia, there is overwhelming support for our candidacy. Now, what is this saying? I see a shift. I mean, I've been, and I continue to be all over Virginia speaking and interacting with people. And what I see in Virginia, I think, is probably indicative of the nation. And that is a lot of people who previously identified themselves as Democrats, lifelong Democrats, independents, a lot of them are shifting to Republican side of the spectrum. And the reason for that is that this has gone too far, even for people who classify themselves as left of center. You're finding people who can't tolerate, they can't have their kids being told their gender is fluid and to be encouraged to transition. They can't have their kids being told a Marxist agenda through critical race theory and racism revitalized. A lot of them just don't want their own children to suffer those things. And then when it comes to these justice issues, they don't want Donald Trump prosecuted if there is an inadequate basis for it. And they don't want the equal justice principle that's the heart of the rule of law removed from this country for a political end. Now, these are our talking points. But just look, for example, at Bobby Kennedy Jr. Revising, revitalizing that element of the former Democrat Party, which
Scoop Jackson Democrats.
Yeah. And so there's a big movement afoot shifting, and a lot of people are moving. There's a recent poll out that shows that among young people, there's actually a significant increase in the number who describe themselves as conservative. That's truly remarkable, because just a few years ago, that same age group was in polling deemed to be very liberal. Well, something's happening, and I feel it. Yeah. I see that. That's the good news.
Yeah, that is the good news, and hopefully that's the light at the end of this very, very dark tunnel that we've all been traveling through here. I think you're right. I think there are still some Scoop Jackson, JFK Democrats out there. They're just not in power right now. And I suspect that this far left lurch that this tyrannical regime has got us on is probably going to hurt them as well. And that's the shame of it all, I think, because in their craven attempt at a power grab here, they have sullied the entire Democrat Party. And I haven't seen many of them stand up and say, this is wrong, Mr. President. I'm waiting for what's Joe Manchin going to say? Good God, in West Virginia, he's about to get trounced. This is a real attempted. You mentioned coup, but this is an attempted one party state going on here. It's so un-American, I can't even fathom it.
And while these radicals who are actually in governance represent an extreme minority, to tell you the truth, you find people who are now for the first time realizing that they can no longer be a silent majority against this, that they have to speak up. I was hoping all along this would happen. I see this happening. I mean, I hear people every day tell me just how disgusted they are with Tim Kaine in our state. And sure. The reason is that these people have wholly gone in for this control agenda and are part and parcel of this movement for the one party state you're talking about. What are their tactics? Character assassination. Suparna Dutta, appointed to the Board of Education by Glenn Youngkin in Virginia, whose only sin was that she dared speak to Ann Kane that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were the great documents of liberty in the history of the world. That defense, which she gave for those things, put her in the hot seat, and Democrats voted 100% in line with one another in the state house to remove her from the board. Right? So people are sick of this. People are sick of the intolerance, the racial bigotry, the ostracization of people merely because they criticize the vaccine, the censorship, big tech and collusion with the White House, the corruption of the Biden administration and Hunter Biden, the Biden Inc. family. All of this is really coming home to roost. Yeah. And I think in 2024, we are going to see considerable successes all across the country.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. We're talking to Jonathan Emord. Mr. Emord, I have to take a real quick break, but we do want to come back to you. And when we do, I want to discuss with you going forward and the reason for the fear from the Democrat Party and their blatant disregard for proper jurisprudence. We'll talk about all of that and more. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When the left talks about shootings, the conversation inevitably turns to guns and the need for new gun laws. What's left out of the conversation is locking up the shooters. If street thugs knew that they'd be rotting in prison if they got caught, they wouldn't be so quick to pull the trigger. But in most major cities around the country, they have little to worry about. Even when they do go to jail, the sentence usually does not fit the crime. Take the story of an 18-year-old in California. 18! Yet the leftist DA tried him as a juvenile for the road rage outraged murder of a newlywed. He's also been linked to two other murders, and they only got 7 years behind bars. He'll be eligible for parole way before that. Now, those who go into a school or a mall, they plan on dying. But for street thugs who use handguns as water pistols, mandatory sentences like a minimum of 10 years behind bars would not only be a deterrent, but it would keep them off the streets, rotting in prison where they belong. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Steve Hooks Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to The Steve Hooks Show on TNT Radio. And again, my guest today, Jonathan Emord, constitutional attorney and candidate for the Senate in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Jonathan, thank you for hanging in. I understand your optimism with people waking up to it, and I share that optimism. But My fear comes into the process of the actual elections. We have been told over and over again that 2020 was the freest, most fair election in U.S. history. You would have to be absolutely out of your mind to believe that, but that's the narrative that is being pushed. Ballot harvesting, early voting, giving people a month to cast a vote, no chain of custody with regards to many of these ballots that were being shoved into ballot boxes during the last big general election. So while I am optimistic about the knowledge of the American people, and as Reagan used to say, he had full faith and credit in the wisdom of the American people, I'm not so optimistic about the procedures of the electoral process. I think that they would do anything to prevent Trump from winning, because I think that they fear that should Trump win, many of them will be going to prison for a long, long time. So what's going to prevent them from totally rigging and cheating this election, and how can we prevent that going forward?
Well, it definitely is going to be attempted, and it's going to be something that is in the works. I mean, we've got effectively a whole slew of people who are organized to do this very thing, not just in California, but around the country. And that criminal enterprise of causing, interfering with the course of an election is something that has to be immediately addressed by the states and localities. In many states, there is effort underway. In Virginia, I'm working with a candidate for the state Senate to introduce legislation I'm drafting for him, which will ensure voter integrity and will transform the law. This is a multifaceted law enforcement effort that needs to be undertaken so that you shrink the voting period down to the way it used to be, require voter identification that is meaningful. A lot of these states have given IDs to people who are illegal aliens, and establish as a condition preceding that you meet all of the election requirements before your vote is counted. And that has to be done with a sophisticated program of validation. And we need to have the ability, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have this. Once a vote is cast for the day of all the voters, that vote should be automatically audited. And we need to get rid of anonymity in voting to that extent, that if you vote, we can identify you and know that this is your vote and this is how you voted. And that has to be a system of validation. So yes, there are means of doing this unquestionably, and they need to be implemented nationwide. And unfortunately, given the composition of Congress, the Senate's still in Democrat hands, and a president who's an idiot, who's a far leftist, we are not going to have the ability to affect any change on the national level. So it has to be state by state. And in my state, as I say, I'm working to get this legislation passed in 2023 so that in the elections in 2024, these horrors will not happen again. And I'm fearful for the elections in 2023 in the state because of these same tactics that are being used. And in Virginia, for example, you have a 45-day voting period, and you have the ability of individuals who are illegal to go in, and all they have to do is say, I don't have my identification, or if they do have identification, need not establish their residency and their citizenship, and they can vote. And if you, even if you don't have any identification in Virginia, all you have to do is fill in a form and say that you have a right to vote, fill in a form, and you get to vote. Well, I'm telling you, this system, which is inviting fraud, needs to stop. And all those states with ballot harvesting absolutely has to be eliminated, right? We have to eliminate ballot harvesting. We have to eliminate mail-in ballots, except where they are themselves certified and have an actual need for it that is demonstrated. So if you're in the service, outside the country, whatever, but it must be established as a basic requirement to do engage in mail-in ballots, and the mail-in ballots have to be capable of being validated themselves.
Well, let me ask you this. How is Governor Youngkin doing on that score? And for that matter, your state legislature and your electoral committee there in Virginia, are they working hand in glove with Governor Youngkin to try and get a grip on this? Or I don't even know who controls the state I don't even know who controls it. Is that in Youngkin's hands or is that in the Democrats' hands?
Well, it's largely decentralized in Virginia down to the county level. And as a consequence, you got northern counties like Fairfax County, where there are serious questions about the integrity of the election process. And then you
that's where all the government employees live.
That's right. And so Youngkin has done what he can without majority control of the House and Senate. He has the House. He does not have the Senate in the state. And so he can't pass the legislation that he needs to really cure this. But as I say, if as we hope, the Senate flips to Republican this time, we will be in a position with the person I'm supporting introducing the legislation. And I suspect that the governor will support that. He's been an advocate of the integrity of the vote, and he's actually done auditing work and determined the extent to which there were issues. And he has his confidence in the existing system. I think that the existing system is not sufficient. And I certainly think that when you, as an illegal alien, could get a driver's license in Virginia, and all it takes to get a voter registration card is the driver's license, you get risks here in Virginia.
As we look at it, as we kind of take an overarching look at the whole thing, it's all these pieces are connected, whether it's, as you mentioned, the southern border, whether it's what's going on in the school systems, whether it's, frankly, even our foreign policy, our COVID policy, our medical system has been politicized. And I don't know how you could look at all this and just say, oh, no, they're batting 1,000. They're doing great there in the federal government. This is fine. This is just all a bunch of right-wing Fox News, claptrap. This is becoming blatantly obvious, and it seems to me that the Democrats have kind of taken, because they know they've got their partners in the media, but they've kind of taken this attitude of, oh, yeah, screw you. Catch us if you can. We'll see you in court. In the meantime, here's an indictment. I mean, it just seems so blatant.
It is. And there's no more profound example of the callous disregard they have for American citizens, of basically turning them in to third class citizens in favor of illegal immigrants being first class, than the border situation. You've got all these benefits being supplied to people coming here illegally. But when it comes to the people who are being victimized by the rapes, by the murders, by the criminal trespass, by the destruction of property as a result of
an
order of the drugs and of terrorists coming into this country. And the just by sheer numbers, the overwhelming impact on all the communities along the border, and then the fentanyl throughout the whole country. I mean, and then the MS-13, 18th Street gangs all being fed by people coming across the border. When you have all of these things happening to American citizens, and they do absolutely nothing to help the American citizen. In fact, they support Soros's anti-incarceration prosecutors all throughout Virginia, the rest of the country. So they're destroying the criminal justice system. They are not giving any help to a single American citizen, not one who has been victimized by their open border policy. So their sympathy go in one direction to illegal entrance.
Yeah.
And absolutely no interest in protecting the American citizen.
And it's all about power-craven tyranny. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Let me just ask you this, because we're about to go. We got about 45 seconds here, Jonathan. Not as a candidate, not even as a politico, but as a constitutional attorney, have you ever been more ashamed of your nation than you are right now? Or the government, at least?
I am ashamed of the Biden administration, for sure. I love this country, and I believe that we will prevail, that ultimately we will overcome all barriers to freedom and progress. That's our legacy. We're going to live up to it.
EmordForVA.com. EmordForVA.com. Jonathan Emord, good luck, sir. God bless. Thank you for joining us today. We'll have you back.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
All right. Coming up on TNT Radio, it's the Patrick Henningsen Show. Until Monday, I'm Steve Hook. Have a wonderful weekend. Goodbye.